Here at Blue Apron, we know exactly how hectic school nights can be. That's why we created Assemble and Bake. Delicious one-pan meals that make family dinner simple. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients and put the pan in the oven to bake. Then you're free to help out with that last-minute diorama. Shop Assemble and Bake at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Winging it, that there's no plan for Venezuela going forward.
Yeah, I know. They're going to say that. I used to be a senator, too. That's what you always say when it's the other party. The bottom line is we've gone into great detail with them about the planning. We've described it to them. In fact, it's not just winging it. It's not just saying or speculating it's going to happen. It's already happening. Like the oil arrangement that we've made with PDVSA on their sanctioned oil that they can't move. Understand, they are not generating any revenue from their oil right now. They can't move it unless we allow it to move because we have sanctions, because we're enforcing those sanctions. This is tremendous leverage. We are exercising it in a positive way. The president described it last night. Secretary Wright will have more to say on it today, who's involved in running this portfolio. And we feel very positive that not only will that generate revenue that will be used to the benefit of the Venezuelan people, and we're ensured that that's what the case is, but it also gives us an amount of leverage and influence and control over how this process moves forward.
So there you have Secretary of State Marco Rubio discussing the oil. Now, the Venezuelan story coming fully to the front stage over this last weekend with the arrest and extraction of Nicolas Maduro from his living quarters, his bedroom, apparently. A lot of people have a lot of questions about it. And when you're not an expert like me, you just kind of look with big wide eyes and go, what's going on here? What are we dealing with here? Now we find out 30 to 50 million barrels of oil. President Trump and the administration said, we're gonna handle that. We're going to take care of that. So what's at stake here? Let's talk to an actual expert about it. Fred Flights back here with us on the Annie Fry Show, the vice chair of the America First Policy Institute Center for American Security, among many other accolades. Fred, welcome back to the show. It's an honor to have you with us.
Hey, Annie, good to be here.
Well, thank you so much. We were talking a little bit earlier in the show. I've got a few different things that I want to ask you about, but you have a lot of experience as a CIA analyst, a House of Intelligence Committee staff member, about certain types of operations that folks like us, we've got no idea what goes into an operation like the Maduro arrest. And I was talking with my co-host Ryan here about, you know, some boys in their backyards talk about being Delta Force and Navy SEAL and having the opportunity to do a mission like this. How much goes into a flawless operation like what our services were able to do in the arrest of Maduro?
Well, it was an extremely well-planned and well-executed operation by the best of the best. You probably saw reports that they built a replica of Maduro's home, which the Delta Force Special Forces officers used to practice on. And, you know, this was so difficult because this residence actually was on a military base. It was protected by Cuban troops. Some of the Cuban troops reportedly were killed. I don't know how many, but I mean, so this was not just swooping down and taking him in his nightgown and putting him on a helicopter. There was fire back. The helicopter was hit. Some of our soldiers were hit. I understand they were not seriously injured. There also was an incredible intelligence operation with operatives on the ground, a CIA presence, I think, that had been there for months. I think we probably had sources very high up in the Maduro government. So it was a very sophisticated operation and included over 100 aircraft to engage in deception and other efforts to suppress the so-called top-notch Chinese and Russian missile defenses that were supposed to make this type of operation impossible.
Yeah. I mean, even listening to you say that, I don't know if it's the tone of your voice, Fred Flights, but I have goosebumps thinking about the risk it takes to have the resolve to go in and do what our forces were able to do and to know the drill, the planning. So many people have to participate in making this flawless because it really could have gone very badly. The story today could be very different than the one that we have.
It was risky, but it was also well planned. It was planned by military professionals who know what they're doing. They know what reasonable risk is. It wasn't done on the spur of the moment. I mean, this was underway for many months. And it is a kind of operation that no other country could have pulled off.
Yeah, and it's good to be on this side of that. I want to ask you a question. It's just something that's rolled around in my brain, and maybe there's nothing to it. But it was kind of strange to me that in Venezuela, there were so many security guards around Maduro that were Cuban. Why would he have Cuban security around him?
You mean Venezuelan security around him? Well, he had Cuban security around him, Cuban secure intelligence officers,
yeah.
Cuban troops, because his country is so corrupt, because his military is broken. He has to rely on Cuba to defend himself. And I thought that was probably an impenetrable shield, that we would never get through that. What the Cubans do is that they provide intelligence officers and soldiers. They also provide doctors almost for free in exchange for oil, because Cuba has no oil and they have a broken economy. So they use services and security to pay for the energy that Venezuela sends them.
Fred Flight speaking with us right now, former NSC chief of staff, CIA analyst, House of Intelligence Committee staff member, and vice chair of the America First Policy Institute, Center for American Security. You mentioned oil there, valuable to Cuba, but let's be honest, valuable to everybody on this green earth. So that has been the latest 24-hour news cycle, a main point of conversation. The left says that the reason we did this was only for the oil. But now we hear the president, the administration is going to jump in and manage up to 50 million barrels of this Venezuelan oil. Did we go, you know, punch the kid in the face on the playground and take his lunch money here? Or is this something that's actually going to benefit the people of Venezuela, as well as obviously Americans?
Well, we conducted this operation because of the chaos in this hemisphere, mostly because of Joe Biden, the flood of illegal migrants, drugs, criminal gangs. It is because our presence in the hemisphere was so much weaker and bad actors were getting a foothold. And I mean, Iran, China, North Korea, all the drugs coming out of Venezuela. We didn't do this for the oil. But having said that, we're in charge of Venezuela right now. We're giving the orders to what's left of the Maduro regime. This is something that President Trump told the leftover officials of the regime to do. And I understand that this oil we're going to take, but it will be used for the benefit of the Venezuelan people.
So how does something like this work? Because we went there. I guess you could say you were liberating the people of Venezuela. I don't know if anyone's gone as far as saying that, but that's the way I see a lot of reaction on social media videos. I've been doing a lot of translating of posts that are written from Venezuelans and reading the types of things that they're saying. How does the Trump administration, the United States of America, manage what is now left in Venezuela without it being a regime change effort?
That is the most important question to ask. It's what all MAGA people are asking right now. And I will tell you that this operation was done in the shadow of the disastrous occupation of Iraq in the second Iraq war, when we did away with the Ba'ath Party officials who were running the Iraq government, let the military go. This led to a power vacuum. It led to an insurgency. What they're trying to do here is to try to find a way to transition from the existing government, where they will eventually set up elections. We will vet people in the government to see who we can keep, because, frankly, the entire government can't be replaced. The entire government can't be fired. We found that out in Iraq. I believe that there are a number of senior people in the government who we bought off or made a deal with before Maduro was released to agree to work with us after he is gone. So it's complicated because the cartels have a strong presence there. There are Maduro loyals who will not want to play ball. But this is what we're doing to avoid a situation where there are American civil servants and soldiers in a nation building operation, which Trump is not going to do.
You know, I'm thinking as you're saying this, you know, what was at stake and the risk it took. But of course, the effort, the planning that goes into mitigating that risk when you take an operation like this on. You know, Fred Fly speaking with us right now. What if we didn't do anything? I guess that was the Biden plan, to say, you know, shake your finger, bad Maduro. You're not doing good things there in Venezuela. You know, don't like the narco terrorism. You're not respecting the will of your people. You're a bad boy. And then just saying that and then being like, OK, that's it. That was the policy. What is the risk of the United States not having the cojones to do what Donald Trump had the cojones to do?
Well, look, this is a narco-terrorist regime. 25% of the people left because of how repressive this regime is, because they broke the economy. And you know, you remember the video of thousands of people coming across the southern border. Well, there was a reason for that. It was instability in this hemisphere. It wasn't only in Venezuela, but a lot of it was coming from Venezuela. And Venezuela's instability was spreading into neighboring nations. We also know that Russia, China, Iran, Hezbollah had a presence in Venezuela. The Chinese spent billions of dollars to install two corrupt pro-China dictators in Venezuela. And the reason they did that is because they wanted the oil super cheap. So they lost that investment. They've lost that source of oil. So this is really resetting international relations that was really tilted against us because of the corruption and the breakdown of Venezuela.
Yeah. The ripple effect of this action on pretty much every facet that I can think of economically, in a trade sense, in a superpower sense, in a neighboring sense here in the Western Hemisphere, we've seen reactions from Colombia, from Brazil, from other areas around there. I mean, everybody is at least paying attention right now in a way that they weren't maybe last week.
I think that's right. The Colombian government is paying attention. They have a corrupt government which is involved in the drug trade also. And more illegal drugs come to the U.S. from Colombia than from Venezuela. I think we've sent a message to that government. That has to stop. And the amount of drugs that come in this country are just fantastic. And they're not just coming in over the border. They're coming in by ship. I don't know if you know that in Venezuela, they actually were building mini submarines to smuggle drugs off the coast of Florida. After they took the drugs out, they would just abandon them because the drug trade was so lucrative.
How quickly do we here in the United States from attempting to stop the narco terrorism in its tracks, how quickly will that reflect in the drugs that are used, the deaths that are recorded? Will that be something that is measurable and in any near future?
My understanding is that there already are measurable results from the closing of the southern border. But I think this blockade of Venezuela and the threat to other drug exporting states in South America, it's going to have a huge effect on the drug trade. Of course, there's also Mexico, and President Trump is talking about how the president of Mexico did not want his help in dealing with the cartels in Mexico. They're going to have their day, too.
Last question before we let you go. We're very grateful for your time today. Fred Flight speaking with us right now. We do understand that the day that Maduro was extracted from Venezuela, that they had met with China. Obviously, China has a great interest in being as closely present to the United States as possible. It does seem as though this is going to affect China's oil intake. How measurable of an effect will this move have on China?
Well, the Chinese are furious, and they complained at the United Nations Security Council this week that this is a violation of international law. Let's be clear. If we were propping up a proxy state just next to China that was sending drugs into China, the Chinese government wouldn't put up with it for 1 minute.
No, you don't think so?
So, I mean, they're losing this investment. They shouldn't have been doing this. They don't have a leg to stand on when they say we're violating international law. When they're surrounding Taiwan and preparing to invade it. But the Chinese are going to take a big loss. They invested big time in Venezuela, thinking that we would never do anything about it.
And my understanding is nobody knew that this was going to happen until after it was done.
Well, you know, it goes more than that. Nobody conceived that the U.S. would ever try this. I mean, how can you defend against something that you don't think is possible or that no one would attempt? Now that we did it, I think dictators worldwide are going to be extra careful. But nobody thought this was possible. They thought that the defenses provided by China and Russia made it far too dangerous to attempt such a thing. And he was supposed to be surrounded by Cuban troops. Well, he was, and we beat them.
Well, Fred Flights, what a great conversation this has been. Thank you for bringing some factual understanding from a greater depth than we could ever obviously provide here. We look forward to having you back to continue to discuss because we know the story. It's not over yet.
Great to be here.
Thank you so much. The vice chair for the America First Policy Institute Center for American Security, former NSC chief of staff, CIA analyst, and House of Intelligence Committee staff member. Ryan, what have you done with your life? Don't you feel incredibly inadequate when you read something like that?
Well, yeah, I do.
Me too, Ryan. I'm with you.
Okay, good.
I served frozen custard at Annie's Frozen Custard in Edwardsville for 2 wonderful years.
That's great.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Pharmacy technician.
I ate that customer.
I know, I served it to
so
you.
So I did a little bit less than you.
Might have filled an antibiotic for you at the medicine shop once.
Maybe, don't know.
No, don't know.
Have no idea. I just know that I like ice cream and medicine.
See, where we come in is we get to connect folks like us to people like Fred Flights.
Mm-hmm.
That was the upside of it. You still seem a little down.
Well, I just am sort of ashamed at my life.
You were the class clown of Collinsville High School class of 1999.
If that's the best you could come up with in this moment,
I thought it was,
I'm still ashamed.
I thought it was the one you'd appreciate the most.
Well, I do, but it's just in comparison to Fred Flights.
You were the entrepreneurial founder of the Club for People with High Self-Esteem.
You're close.
Oh, what's it?
The club was called the Happy Fun Club for Self-Esteem Building.
It didn't get approved.
It didn't get approved, even though we had a teacher sponsor.
You literally tried to get that through.
It almost happened.
And they said to you?
They said to me, no, you will amount to nothing.
You're like,
and I was like, that's why I need this club.
This does for my self-esteem. It's people like you keeping people like me down.
It was the man.
Collinsville High School.
Yep.
1999.
You know how many people went on to do nothing because they didn't have any self-esteem? Probably about 4 or 5.
I'd like to know the names of the people who denied that. I bet they'd like to know. There are people listening right now. They're like, did I do that? Was that me?
Yes. Yes, it's you.
If I'm in Collinsville and I'm sitting in a place for an hour or more, people are like, I knew Ryan Wiggins.
Does that really happen?
It happens. And they're not the people who say to me, is Ryan really like that?
They know.
They already know. And I'm like, let's flip the script here. How long has Ryan really been like that? And then we talk, we chat, we get to know each other. We swap stories.
That's great. I'm glad that I've left some sort of legacy on this earth.
No, you literally are. You are.
Okay.
You are.
I am the legacy? What are you saying I am?
I'm saying that you've made an impression upon people, and that's what you strive to do.
Thank you. I feel good now. You can tell Fred Flights to listen to the end of this interview now.
I fear that bringing up your club for happy people who have self-esteem or whatever has not been good for your self-esteem.
That's right.
All right, let's take a break. We'll
okay.
be back.
I was too strong. You were trembling. You couldn't handle.